The following Torah class was presented by Rabbi Mordechai Ryan in the Young Israel of Cherry Hill during the summer season 2006. For more information, please visit www.teach613.org. We thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy.
Okay. Topic for tonight in preparation for Tevasim B'Tamos is to appreciate the concept of mourning, if we could find meaning in mourning. The famous line that you may have heard, the joke of a guy in the middle of Tisha B'Av, about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he says to the rabbi, "Rabbi, I'm not enjoying this mourning." So I don't know if you're going to enjoy mourning, you're not going to enjoy mourning, but at least to find meaning, what does it mean? What are we doing? So for starters, what? Thank you very much. What are we mourning? During the 3 weeks, Shavas B'Tamos, Tisha B'Av, the Churban, the destruction of the temple, of the Beis HaMikdash. So Shavas B'Tamos, if we keep it really simple, there are actually 5 things that happened, but keep it simple, the walls of Jerusalem were breached in the second temple on Shavas B'Tamos. On Tisha B'Av, both Batei Mikdash were destroyed, and that's what we're commemorating. Now, so what? Why are we commemorating that? What relevance does it have to us? So we don't see Judaism just as the last 50 years, 100 years, 200 years. We think of Judaism, the span of at least the 3,300 years that we're a nation, at least. And the Beis HaMikdash was the goal. The goal was that there should be a palace, an ultimate synagogue, where Hashem relates to us. Rav Shamshon Feil Hirsch writes that as long as that palace was a true reflection of our relationship with Hashem, so the Beis HaMikdash stood. As soon as it becomes a falsehood, so Hashem destroys it. It doesn't make sense anymore. We're not on that relationship anymore. So He destroys it. The way we phrase it, we're always hoping for Mashiach.
Must be good water we gave
him. What do we expect to happen when Mashiach comes?
Third Beis HaMikdash, the last one.
Third Beis HaMikdash, which is going to be eternal. What else are we expecting Mashiach to do? Tchiyat HaMeitim. The resurrection of the dead is also part of that destiny. The two simple things that are themes even in the beginning of Mashiach times are universal knowledge of God and world peace, which I don't mean to digress into one of my favorite topics, but there is a world religion that claims that Mashiach came. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but respectfully, humorously, whatever you want to say, but there are two criteria for Mashiach's times: universal knowledge of God and world peace. And we don't have either. Not only that, but the louder people preach that you should know the Lord, the louder we realize that what they're claiming to be knowledge of God is not universal knowledge of God. It hasn't been achieved yet. The fact that they're preaching to you means that whatever they believe hasn't been fulfilled. There's a great joke of a Jewish landowner in Poland. And of course above him is the real landowner, the Polish nobleman. And this Mushka finally figures out a way to buy the land that he works on, and he and his wife are ecstatic. They have a roof over their heads, they own the land, they don't have to pay rent each month, and they're landowners. Nothing could be better. One day he comes home from shul, and he says that the rabbi made an announcement, and Mashiach's on his way, and Mashiach's almost here, and everybody should get ready. And he tells this to his wife, and he's all excited, because everyone in shul was excited. And his wife said, "Oi, what's going to be? If Mashiach comes, we're going to have to all go to Israel. And we finally have a roof over our heads, and landowners, and the parents isn't bothering us. And what's going to be?" And she's all nervous. And she thinks for a few moments, and then she says, I have a solution. The same Hashem that saved us from the Poritz and saved us from the pogroms, the same Hashem will save us from Mashiach. And the humor of it is, it captures us. Because we live in such a clouded existence that we don't know which way is up, we don't know what it is we're hoping for exactly. But somehow we know, we have a tradition that we're hoping for Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, it's going to be good. We're going to be provided for physically, spiritually, and we'll enjoy a relationship with Hashem. He was a big supporter of Lakewood. And he came to Rav Aaron Cutler and said that, "I heard you mention that not only those who study Torah will enter the heavenly Beis Medrash, the study hall, but even those who support Torah are going to be able to enter into Hashem's special study hall." He says, "I don't find that very exciting. Maybe you like studying 12 hours a day, but I would find studying 12 hours a day very boring. I'd rather go back to my business. You can have your money, enjoy it. I'll support a good cause, but I don't understand. You're blessing me that I should be in the study hall 12 hours a day. I couldn't handle that." And Rav Aaron answered him, "You're going to be in the study hall 12 hours a day, and the blessing is you're going to enjoy it." So we don't have a clear picture. It's hard to focus. What does it mean, Mashiach's times? But to a certain extent, it's a Jewish act of faith, an understanding that Hashem's going to take care of us. There's a famous distinction between the mourning that we do regarding Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to the mourning that we do, God forbid, when a relative passes away. A person loses a great-grandmother. So there's a period of mourning. I loved her. But the function of that mourning is to put things in perspective, catharsis, to be able to leave go, and to treasure the memories. Mourning is to leave go in a healthy way. When we talk about the Beis HaMikdash and mourning it each year, we're not talking about leaving go. That's the one time of the year that we're holding on, and we're reminding ourselves that the world we live in as we see it is not normal. The world we live in, with anti-Semitism, with crisis, with difficulty, is not the way Hashem wanted it. Hashem wanted this phenomenal relationship with us.
Well, plus the fact that it's almost a reverse mourning, because, God forbid, when somebody dies, it's so intense when it happens, and then as time goes on, it's always there, but it's not as deep, as opposed to the 3 weeks you start off, the way it's coming, but it's not so bad until the 9 days,
very good.
It's worse, and then...
Very good. The system that we have to commemorate Tisha B'Av is very similar to Shavuos preparation, to Simchas Torah preparation. We understand the Jewish calendar as building up to a goal. On Rosh Hashanah, for example, we accept Hashem as king. We have the total of Aseres Yemei Tshuva to perfect ourselves, so to speak. And then you have atonement on Yom Kippur, celebration on Sukkot, and finally Simchas Torah, when we're able to dance with the Torah and say, this is where I belong. You had the same thing, Shavuos time, with 7 weeks of preparation. People tell me that they subscribe to at least 7 emails of self-perfection. By the time you read them all and you came to Shavuos, I'm sure everybody was perfect. I don't know what happened since then. Tisha B'Av is the same thing. That's correct. We start off with Shavasa B'Tamuz, with acknowledging that we're on a course, and we stick to it. And we have constant commemoration and methods to remember and to regain, to basically treasure that there was something that we lost. Famous story I love to repeat. They say the story that Napoleon went walking in France on Tisha B'Av night, and he peeked into a shul where he heard crying and wailing, and he saw that the room was very distinctive. The parochas was removed, the way the minig is to remove the parochas, people sitting on the floor, candlelight, wailing. And he asked his advisors, you know, what's that? And they told him, these are Jews, and they're mourning the loss of the temple. And he thought to himself, knowing a little bit of Jewish history, he says, 1800 years ago, a people that mourns its past has a future. Because if you can remember that you're something greater than where you are now, then you have a future. Because then you can transcend time. Beautiful paragraph Cecil Roth has in his book of history about Jews in the Middle Ages. So you had pogrom after pogrom. I mean, Jews were decimated out of cities. He writes there, beautiful paragraph, after every pogrom, the Jew would retire to his home, open his volume of Talmud, and be lost in its serenity. If you're able to transcend, then, yeah, it's a tough life. But we're from a different world, and you're able to live that type of life. The Chasam Sofer, on one occasion, someone was celebrating a beautiful new building, so he made a comment that as beautiful as it is to celebrate the new building, but there's a downside to the new building also. What's the downside? He said, think of a prince who was banished from the palace. You know, he was doing something really bad. He put graffiti on the palace walls. So the king threw him out. And he went to the next town, and he had to muddle around making a living until the king would call him back. And one day, emissaries come from the king, and they find the prince, and they tell him, the king sent us, we should buy a plot of land for you, and we're going to build you a home. And the prince started crying. He says, until now, I thought this was a temporary thing. I thought any day the king would invite me back. Now you're telling me you're going to build a home for me? I'm getting nervous. That means my father doesn't want me back. The Chasam Sofer said, when things are bad in Galus, in the exile, they're really bad, it hurts. But in my heart of hearts, I celebrate because I know it's temporary. We build this grand building, I'm getting nervous. Hashem is so benevolent, it looks like he's going to keep us here for a while. So there's another spin on everything. You could see the positive, you could see the second perspective. If we can remember that there's an affirmation of yearning, there's something better that we're looking for. A few weeks ago, we had Rebbetzin Rigler speak about how she came to be an observant Jew. And she made such a fascinating comment. She said that some people think the laws of Shabbos are very restrictive. But if you tune into the laws of Shabbos properly, so she described how there's a mosquito on her bedboard, and it's Shabbos. And she only wants to take her hand and swat it. And instead, this mosquito in her mind is going to be biting her all night. And she can't swat it because you're not allowed to kill an insect on Shabbos. So she says, if you want, you can view that as restrictive. Or if you want, you can train yourself that this is an act of love. Hashem, I want to do it. Physically, I could do it in an instant. But I'm not going to do it because you told me not to. That's my relationship with you. You don't want me to do it, I won't do it. If you don't appreciate that, you know, try marriage. Do I understand why my wife doesn't want me to? I won't give you examples. I don't get it. She doesn't want me to. I'm not going to swat that insect. It actually is a pretty good example, right? Why can't you swat a fly on the kitchen table? Why not? You can't. Because the matriarch of the home doesn't want you to. The same concept can be applied to the 3 weeks observance. If a person wants, you know, you're not going to let me take a haircut. That was restrictive. Or if you want, you can be focused on this principle that there is a national solidarity. We, as a nation, have a loss. And once a year, we commemorate that loss and recognize that the world we live in is not normal. We complain all the time about Israeli double standards. Everybody else is allowed to prosecute terrorists, but we're not allowed to prosecute terrorists. You give examples. We have to remind ourselves it's not a normal way to live. And that someday, the code word is Mashiach. But that's the concept of redemption, that Hashem will eventually restore us to the glory that we had.